This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The U.S. Department of Defense is in the midst of reforming how it does business. Along with realizing cost savings and efficiencies, these management reforms and initiatives seek to create a more agile, responsive, and efficient organization, motivated by the need to make better use of resources, improve stewardship, and provide the best support possible to the warfighters. How is DoD improving its business operations? What is DoD doing to modernize its business processes and use resources more effectively? And how is DoD promoting management and operational excellence? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Beth McGrath, Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense. Welcome, Beth. It's great to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is John Vonglis. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here also.
Beth, before delving into specific initiatives, I was hoping you would give us an overview of the history and mission of DoD's Deputy Chief Management Officer and the office that it was created.
So back in 2001, there was a lot of focus on the financial audit, achieving financial audit within the Department of Defense. And so we established the Financial Management Modernization Program. But over the course of time, we recognized that it takes more than just the financial community to achieve audit readiness and really make headway into our overarching business operations. So in 2005, we established the Business Management Modernization Program to look more holistically across the business enterprise and not just focus on the financials. And there, too, Congress recognized that we needed some more tools in our toolbox, if you will, to really go after the entire business space. So it is around that time that Congress legislated to us the utilization of a business enterprise architecture, enterprise transition plan, more effective governance, really the tools that most corporations have as they manage their overall operation. The Deputy Chief Management Officer position was established in the 2009 National Defense Authorization Act, and it was there that they created both the position of the Deputy Chief Management Officer and codified the role of the Deputy Secretary of Defense as the Chief Management Officer or Chief Operating Officer across the department. And that really elevated the conversation to be more holistic, not only within the OSD element, but also across the military departments. Because in that same legislation, they identified the undersecretaries of the military departments as the chief management officers for their respective components. So they really put the structure across the department, across all of the business lines, to effectively manage and oversee and integrate the entire business space.
So your charge, and it's a very important charge, is an enterprise mandate. And operationally, how is your office organized? What's the size of the budget, types of employees, and how do you interact with the armed services, as you mentioned just now?
So up until recently, we had a very small office. The office was actually established during the tail end of the Bush administration. And so at that time, it was recognized that we needed to stand it up, but really it would be the next administration that really put its mark on how it wanted this office to work in the DoD enterprise. So we started out with about 12 people doing multiple jobs, and only recently with the disestablishment of the defense agency that we oversaw are we really growing, moving some of those functions into my office. And so we'll go from about 12 to a little over 130 in the next year. So percentage-wise, it's a significant growth. And our interaction with the military departments is daily on many different fronts, from a systems or process perspective to standards and various investments. And my main interaction is with the undersecretaries of the military departments, again, who serve as their chief management officers. But we also must integrate across the OSD, the Office of Secretary of Defense Enterprise, because those are the folks that actually establish the policies and standards where the business is done. And so it's critically important that we're integrating and integrated with the thought process, both at the OSD level and at the military departments where most of the business is executed.
Actually, I'd like to talk more about your actual role. What are the specific duties and responsibilities of the Deputy Chief Management Officer? And can you tell us, how does it support the overall DoD mission?
So my function seems to grow daily. I would say technically and by statute or by charter, we have very much an integration role. We're really integrating, again, strategy, process, and performance across the DoD enterprise in each one of the business lines. And so I mentioned previously the OSD staff. They really are the business line owners. We have an area who's owned by the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. So we have the HR function. We have financials. And we've got the supply chain piece. But if the department doesn't act holistically as an enterprise, then each would optimize potentially their own stovepipe as opposed to really looking across the department. So it's a long-winded way of saying my job is to ensure that I work with everyone across the OSD to align policy, process, and also information technology. And it's really important to clearly communicate and articulate the mission and the policy aspects to the military departments. Because at the end of the day, they do execute in accordance with the policy. And so it's really very much an integration function, a prioritization of business, what are the business priorities, and then also the implementation oversight of many of our major automated information systems that are being deployed across the department.
Beth, and regarding your responsibilities and duties in that capacity, what would you say your top three challenges are that you face in the position, and how are you going about addressing them?
Working at the Department of Defense is a terrific opportunity, and I have been there for a very long time, 23 years specifically. And so understanding how big DoD is to someone who hasn't actually lived there is very, very difficult sometimes. So I would say size creates a challenge, because to try and implement something across an enterprise that is as big as the 16th country in the world would be, that doesn't happen overnight, nor does it happen very easily. And so really it's coming up with a framework that can be executed, replicated, and implemented across the defense enterprise is absolutely probably my top two challenges if I was to was able to account the size for the first two. But I would also add complexity to that list. Many of our operations have started, and when I say operations, I don't mean from a military perspective. The way we conduct business is very, very different. We are very non-standard. Frankly, by design, we were that way. And so now in this environment of, I'll say, this austere fiscal environment, and with our ability really to try and get at, how do we do what we do across the enterprise? How much does it cost across the enterprise? Really having the complexity that we have and the variability and variation in the way we execute is very different. So if you put size and complexity together, one would wonder why I would want this job. But I do think it's terribly exciting, because it's also an opportunity to really make significant change in an enterprise that, really wants to and can execute in just the most tremendous ways. We have one of the most, the strongest military powers still in the world, and being a support to that military presence, I think, is really important. So, this building this coalition for change across the department, articulating the importance of the business mission and how it really facilitates and empowers and enables our core national security mission, I think, is a tremendous opportunity. And so, size and complexity, yes, we have both, but we also have some of the best, people that, you know, I certainly have had the opportunity to work with, and it's really getting to those people to enable the change and establish the change agents across the whole Federation, if you will, is really a very exciting part of what I do.
Well, Beth, given your experience, I'd be interested to know what are the characteristics of an effective leader, and who has informed your leadership style and management approach?
I think people look for someone to make those decisions. And I also think you need to be confident, but not overly so. So I believe confidence inspires confidence in others. And I believe that, you know, a winning team is a winning team not by accident, because they believe in themselves and they believe in what they do. And so it's really that also ties to the passion. I really think the austere, really good leaders are those who are very passionate about what they do. They, you know, maintaining high standards, not only for yourself, but for others, raising the bar, you know, demanding excellence. And I don't mean perfection. And, you know, finally, people need to trust you. You need to be trustworthy. You need to have a strong sense of character, because I think without that, especially doing what we do in business transformation, where we work with absolutely everybody, I think you really need to bring your A game always and have the trust in people to then drive a specific initiative or focus or outcome.
How is DoD improving its business operations? We will ask Beth McGrath, Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What are the seven management imperatives all government executives need to know? How is DoD improving its business operations? What is FAA's next generation air transportation system, or NextJet? How is New York City shaping a government that is customer focused, innovative, and more efficient? And what about power, security, and leadership in the 21st century? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Beth McGrath, Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense. Also joining us from IBM is John Bonglis. Beth, your office is the primary agent for integrating and improving DoD's critical business operations, framing the strategy to execute DoD's overarching management agenda. To that end, would you tell us more about DoD's business enterprise architecture? How do the BEA, the FY11 Strategic Management Plan, and the Enterprise Transition Plan complement your efforts?
The business enterprise architecture, I'm just shocked that I'm actually saying how much I love to talk about architecture, because that was not the case a few years ago. But it's very telling, too, from a departmental perspective, because architecture should be understood by many other people, not just those who build architecture. Because to communicate the value of a business enterprise architecture really is to and enable what we're doing. And the way I characterize the architecture is that I've talked a little bit about the holistic approach and this end-to-end focus that we have in the department. The architecture is the place you write it down. So if you made agreement on a business process or a standard in a specific area, you need a place to write it down that everybody knows, you know, it's going to be there. And so that is the blueprint, if you will, that drives the path ahead from a business perspective. And so, yes, you need architects to build it because they know how all the pieces fit together. But you need people, the functional community, the business line owners, the financial folks, the HR people, the supply chain experts, to really articulate how they want to execute their end-to-end process. And then you hand it to the architects and they document it in the architecture, so that, you know, if you want to ensure that you've got seamless communication between your financial and your supply chain system, then you ought to follow the rules or the blueprint as articulated in the architecture. And so that is very important to have folks understand it, and it needs to be executable and understandable to, I'll say, a layman like myself, and to all the various program managers and business line owners out there. And so, you know, to do architecture for architecture's sake is the wrong thing, but to do architecture aligned to a strategy with a purposeful outcome is the absolute right thing. And that's really where we're trying to use BEA, the Business Enterprise Architecture, to drive the overarching business. So I mentioned that the BEA needs to align to a strategy for it to be purposeful and meaningful. The strategic management plan is the business strategic document. It's also aligned to the department's overarching strategic document, which is the Quadrennial Defense Review. And we just published the latest update, if you will, to the QDRs. It's referred to in February of 2010. And they do that every 4 years. We have a strategy document. But every year we talk about, you know, so what's changed and how do we need to course correct or adjust. The strategic management plan is definitely aligned to the QDR. And there's an overarching goal in the QDR that talks about, you know, implementing the reform agenda and really going after the business space. And that's where we hook, if you will, the SMP, the strategic management plan, to the overarching enterprise goals. In 2011, we had the last publication was in 2011, and we had five overarching goals. And we're about to publish the 2012/13 strategic management plan, where you will see the five goals really expand to seven. And in those areas that we're putting additional focus are things like the financial management, you know, auditability. We're taking a total workforce look. You know, do we have the right mix and number of civilian, contractor, and military to do what it is we're trying to do? Very much focused on the better buying power from an acquisition perspective. Ash Carter, Secretary Carter, has been out talking significantly about how we're looking to adjust the acquisition process. And so there's a lot of very, I'll say, holistic approaches and goals from a strategic management perspective tied to initiatives, tied to measures. So it's an overarching performance management. I mean, we actually actively manage all of those business lines. And finally, I think you mentioned the Enterprise Transition Plan. So that is the document that says, well, here's where I am today and here's how I'm getting to the future state. And it's very much tied to, you know, where are you from a systems development perspective? How many do you have? And sort of where are you going with all these systems? What is your target environment look like? What changes are you making in standards or processes? And so that really is the document that says, here's where I am today, and this is the place I want to be, and then how we're going to get there and by when.
Well, could you elaborate more on DoD's core business missions and maybe highlight some of those areas? You mentioned, I think, seven where you'd have some improvement you're looking at.
So the core business areas that we had previously defined: weapon systems, life cycle management, material supply and services, real property and infrastructure, financial management, and human resources. Those areas are very much aligned to the way DoD is organized. And we have really found that in order to drive business improvements or business operations, you really need to cut across the various functional areas. Those are all very functionally aligned, tied to an organization. And so we're really looking at, you know, what are the end-to-end processes that we really need to go after? There are 15 that are in the commercial space, and we have chosen two of them to put our main focus on, and they are hire to retire and procure to pay. And it's really taking a look at defining what the high-level end-to-end process looks like. What standards do you need? What changes do you need to make? And what systems do you have that are currently executing those processes? And you'd be amazed what you find when you start mapping sort of systems to process. And then, you know, it is no secret that DoD has thousands of systems that are not interoperable. And so the goal here is to say, well, if I'm trying to execute an end-to-end process, which is what we do every day, then our systems should be enablers to the execution of that process. And so it's I'm going to say not terribly exciting to some people to, you know, map systems to processes. But when you see really the opportunity to make things better and more seamless, it's really hard not to do something about it. And so really we are mapping and aligning and documenting the various processes and standards, because those are the things that make things go. I mean, we want it to be invisible to the to the operators out there. They don't need to know all about the procure to pay and hire to retire. At the end of the day, they just want their paycheck right, and they want it fast. They want the information reliable and accurate so that they can make decisions about, you know, do I have enough cash to buy this or do I need to do something else? I mean, it's all about achieving business outcomes.
So speaking of business outcomes, I'd like, if you could, to maybe elaborate on DoD's efforts to reform its IT acquisition and employ a new acquisition process that meets the dynamic needs, the IT needs of such a complex organization. And what are you doing also to enhance DoD's acquisition workforce?
So IT acquisition reform is certainly an area that we've put some focus on over the last over a year. There have been many, many studies on how do you reform acquisition. I frankly have lost count how many studies. But there are some very consistent, constant themes about requirements, definition, and determination. I mean, I'm sure every study in every program that's had a lesson learned or a deep dive on it, if it has exceeded cost or schedule, you can always go back to the requirements definition. I mean, we tend to think we have one bite at the apple, and so we put everything in up front. And therefore, the programs that we're pursuing are large and complex before they even start. And so a big push, if you will, in the IT space is to say, well, you don't need to get everything at the first bite. You can take a very incremental approach to delivering capability and therefore define the increments in those, I'll call them bite size, although they're big bites because after all, we are DoD. I'll deliver a certain capability followed by the next, followed by the next. So you're really taking an incremental approach to delivering capability, and you don't have to have it all in the first one. The commercial space never has it all done. It's never a 100% solution when they send it out the door. We need to have both the ability and the backbone to do that ourselves. And that's a very big push. So short duration projects, very definable business requirements or requirements, if you will, because IT is more than just business. We certainly have command and control as well. So that's a big piece. Rationalize the requirements, lock those, and then manage those like crazy so that you can deliver capability really in a 12 to 18 month cycle as opposed to a 5 to 7 year cycle, which is unfortunately some of what our history shows. Some of the other things, the test and evaluation and certification and accreditation, we tend now to treat them as serial processes done by different organizations. There's no reason really that we can't bring that, both the information assurance, that whole certification together with test so that, you know, we're executing test and certification at the same time. That will take somewhere from 10 to 12 months off of the cycle time. We're looking at the funding aspects. Certainly, some of the other federal agencies have more flexibility in their funding, such that they've got an IT budget that is a two-year appropriation, and they have great flexibility in that. In order for us to have that luxury, if you will, we'll need many, many people aligned to understanding and seeing and having transparency into, you know, what our movements are from a budget perspective. So that one I'm not terribly optimistic about, but it is something that we are looking to do to see if there is more flexibility in how we fund for IT so that if there is an urgent need that we could make funds available to them pursue. I believe you asked from a workforce perspective as well. We've got a few things. Certainly, we have the Defense Acquisition University and the various defense acquisition legislation that says, hey, you know, we really are serious. We want your folks skilled. In the IT space, there's also an exchange program with industry where we can send people to industry and they can come to the department to learn more about information technology. We're capitalizing on the courses that DAU has, and also the National Defense University has a lot of programs in IT. I believe very recently, within the last 6 months, the Office of Personnel Management has established a position description for an IT program manager. It is new. And it may not seem like earthquakes level news, but from people like me who oversee IT programs, I find that we tend to identify somebody who is, you know, a decent program manager to then take over an IT program, but they don't have any applied experience and they haven't gone to those specialized schools. And so we're really trying to put that same sort of educational focus on the IT program managers because it is very different. If you procure an enterprise resource planning capability, managing that and implementing that is very different than doing a custom code development or something of that sort. But we're really putting a lot more focus on, do we have the right people with the right skill sets, and do we have the educational pipeline to send them through?
Given that the DoD leaders need access to timely, relevant, and reliable financial and cost information to make their to make informed decisions, could you tell us about some key initiatives being pursued to strengthen DoD's financial management practices and activities, and also as a follow up, how closely you are working with Undersecretary of Defense Bob Hale, the Comptroller, on improving financial information and achieving audit readiness?
So audit is a that is a big topic at the moment, both within the building and from our stakeholders at the Congress and at Ann House, and also at Office of Management and Budget. We have very recently, I should say in August of 2009, Secretary Hale really prioritized his focus on achieving financial auditability, very much focused on the information that we use every day to manage within the department, so the budgetary information and something the accountants refer to as existence and completeness of assets. I am not an accountant, nor do I play one on TV, but I do co-chair with Secretary Hale the Financial Improvement Audit Readiness Board, the FIRE board, if you will, that oversees all of our actions and activities associated with our plan to audit. And so all the military departments, both their deputy chief management officers looking across their corporation, in addition to their financial managers, their comptrollers. And I mentioned previously the various business lines in OSD, they are also at the table. And the big difference in the conversation today is, you know, Bob, Secretary Hale, has put that focus on the budgetary information because that is what we use. And he has brought the conversation to a much broader perspective. Previously, I mean, the folks who were really paying attention to audit were those who were the comptrollers and the CPAs. It never would have been the logistics team or the human resources team. I mean, give me a break. They have nothing to do with audit. But if, at the end of the day, they have everything to do with audit because we have to audit pay. We have to audit all these financial transactions. Do we have an audit trail? And so it has really become everybody's, I'll say, problem or opportunity to contribute to the department's overarching audit focus. And certainly Secretary Gates had it as a priority. Secretary Panetta continues that, in fact, is asking, you know, can we accelerate? And I think that the current 2017 goal that we have on the table is certainly a stretch goal, but one that, you know, we are putting actions and plans and activities behind so that we can monitor progress, you know, as we move forward. So Secretary Hale and I have a lot of opportunities to both testify and talk about where are we on our various audit strategies. You know, I think that having this, again, holistic, I use the term quite often, but frankly, in order to achieve auditability or any business outcomes, it takes the entire department. And so putting the right structure in place, putting plans in place, having proactive oversight, and then, frankly, cascading the auditability outcome into the senior executive performance plans, not only just the financial folks, but the logisticians now have it as a performance outcome, is very, very different and I think very much needed in order to, you know, have everyone's eye on the ball and making progress.
Well, thank you, Beth. You touched on many subjects, from initiatives to people to systems to processes, and all this it's somehow, at least in my mind, inextricably linked to governance. And if I could touch on that a little bit, because you do have numerous management reforms in place. Could you describe a little bit the governance structure you have created, that you have in place to facilitate this level of department-wide progress and accountability?
I mentioned earlier in the conversation that Congress gave us some tools, of one of which was the establishment of a board called the Defense Business Systems Management Committee. It is chaired by the Deputy Secretary of Defense, and currently we run it on a and have, frankly, run it on a monthly basis. I've been the executive secretary of that board since its establishment, way back in 2005. So, but it is the place where we have the business conversation, and the undersecretaries of the various business lines, so like Secretary Hale or Secretary Carter, and then the undersecretaries of the military departments. And so you have the business team, if you will, at the table having the conversations around, you know, where are we with the enterprise transition plan, what our performance measures look like. And then underneath it, we have a board, it's an end-to-end governance board that's very much focused on what progress are we making from that end-to-end perspective, again, with the two priorities being that hired to retire and procure to pay, because we have systems that we intend to invest in those spaces, and we want to make sure that we're proactively managing there. And then each one of the military departments has their Defense Business Systems Management Committee, is fondly referred to as the DBSMC. Each one of the military departments has their own version, so they're looking corporately around their corporation. They have a management forum. And each one of these initiatives, I mentioned that Secretary Hale and I co-chair this fire governance board, again, focused on auditability. We have another board focused on supply chain, the joint logistics board, infrastructure management. And so we have various, you know, governance so that it cascades across the department, throughout the department, you know, so decisions can be made at appropriate levels. But it all comes up to the chief management officer being the deputy secretary.
How is DOD cutting costs and modernizing processes? We will ask Beth McGrath, Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is FAA's Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen? How is the U.S. Department of Homeland Security turning its one DHS vision into reality? What is New York City doing to shape a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? And how is the DOD improving its business operations? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Hear from FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, DHS Undersecretary for Management Raphael Boris, New York City Deputy Mayor for Operations Stephen Goldsmith, and Dave Winogren, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at DOD, Professor Joseph Nye and General Anthony Zinni on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century, and seven management imperatives that government leaders should pursue to be successful in an era of fiscal constraint. All of this and so much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Beth McGrath, Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense. Also joining us from IBM is John Bonglis. Beth, given the significant fiscal and economic pressures the country is facing, DOD leadership has embarked on a department-wide cost-cutting effort with a particular emphasis on business operations. Would you tell us more about DOD's efforts to cut costs and realize savings? And what are some of the key initiatives being pursued within the department to do just that?
Well, as everybody is certainly well aware, Secretary Gates, actually it was August 9th of last year, announced the various initiatives across the department. I believe there were four tracks when he made his speech, moving in pursuit of the $100 million in overhead savings over the next 5 years, really trying to move some of what we refer to as tail into tooth, so some of the support functions into our overarching mission, sort of the national security mission. We also sought ideas from various entities, the DOD workforce being one of them, the various think tanks, if you will, and boards like the Defense Science Board and the Defense Business Board. Again, looking for ideas and lessons learned, experience from these various bodies and institutions. And then we really overall assessed, how are we organized? Are we organized in a way that optimizes the things we want to do? Or is there opportunity to make changes? And certainly, you know, folks wanted to take a look at all the overhead functions that were performed, particularly at OSD and Office of Secretary of Defense, to see if there was an opportunity, again, to focus our efforts more holistically and not from a bifurcated perspective. And so I, along with Secretary Hale, have had the opportunity to track many of these initiatives. And so what we wanted to do is ensure that we've got plans in place, project plans, if you will, in place that will enable the realization of the savings that were identified in the 12 budget that was sent over to the Hill. And so Secretary Hale and I have put, an automated type process in place with accountability at the various senior levels to say, you know, are you going to achieve the savings that you've identified? Is there, you know, more that you've learned that maybe it wasn't such a good idea, so we needed to course correct if necessary? You know, are you at risk of achieving those, and if so, why? The personnel piece, the personnel savings, the freezing of the personnel levels at the 2010 caps are the thing that is the one area that people are most challenged with. But we are looking at, attrition, various tools that from an HR perspective that we can employ so that we're not adversely impacting or separating individuals. And then I specifically had the opportunity with Secretary Hale to pursue the disestablishment of the Business Transformation Agency. That was an agency that worked for me. And we were able to identify areas that would logically move to the Defense Logistics Agency from a systems oversight perspective. They do some of that work today, take advantage of the infrastructure that they had. And then, as I previously mentioned, many of those functions that were executed but overseen by my office are moving now into my office, but at significantly lower levels than reduced levels than existed before.
Beth, I'm going to ask you a question here on healthcare. We all know it's critical, and it's more than actually not healthcare per se, but health technology. I understand in the field of health IT, DOD and the Department of Veterans Affairs have committed to a full and seamless electronic exchange and record portability of healthcare information. Could you tell us a little more about your role in moving this vision to reality and some of the complexities perhaps and some of the issues around that?
So, yes, I actually have a significant role in the health IT. It reminds me of when you said, what is your job description? And this was not in it. But it is an opportunity that has come my way. And we have put a very focused effort, and I was introduced into the space, if you will, in the December timeframe. Frankly, it was a Saturday session with many, many people, both in DOD and VA, where we talked about really what is the way we collectively want to go. So each department was pursuing its own path toward the modernization of our respective legacy environments. Actually, it was Secretary Gates, after meeting with Secretary Shinseki from VA, sent a little note that said, you know, hey, why don't you all come see us and tell us what your recommendation is on a way ahead? Is it separate where we can interface? Is it interoperable? Or do we both use the same system? And after many, many conversations, we came back in and have agreed to pursue this joint common platform for electronic health records. And so for us to be standard at the data level really enables us to be interoperable in a very much a real-time basis. VA has also agreed to move their data centers into our DISA data centers, and so we'll all be together again, so we're pulling from the same data sources. Right. We're working all the service level agreements right now with, between DISA and VA. And then to the extent that we can use common clinical applications, we will, based on, again, the architecture and standard interfaces. Many of our business processes could be the same. We are doing the business process work. We want to ensure that we've done the business process reengineering, have the doctors bless that's the process, you know, that we want to use, and then pursue an application after that. And so, and it also aligns to where the federal space is going from a health information technology. I actually also am the DOD representative to the National Health Information Technology Task Force, again, so that we're aligned with where Health and Human Services is going and the Office of the National Coordinator. And so that is a very important space, very much on the minds of certainly Secretary Shinseki. He and Secretary Panetta very recently met, agreed to, you know, stay on the same path In fact, we're prepping for a briefing to the to them in the September timeframe.
So may I ask a follow-up? Is this beyond the conversation of whether it's Vista or Alta, or is this goes to the core of that conversation?
So we answered that question. It's that is neither, yeah. And but that was and has been a question I've learned for a very long time. Neither solution is the optimal solution for either of us, and so we really are taking this standards-based, data-driven approach, common architecture, common data standards. And then common applications, you know, where it makes sense.
Beth, the U.S. Government Accountability Office, GAO, updates its high-risk list every 2 years. I understand in 2009, DOD accounted for half of the 30 areas identified in that list. And yet DOD has made tremendous strides in improving personnel security clearance program, reducing backlogs and speeding up processes. I'd like for you to elaborate on your efforts in this area. What has been done to improve this enterprise-wide process, and to what extent have you used Lean Six Sigma to contribute to this effort?
So we spend a lot of time with our partners in the Government Accountability Office, and I would just like to say that DOD owns on its own 8 of the 30 and then shares another 7, which is how we get to we own half. In the personal security clearance area, again, it was very much focused not only on the DOD backlog and transaction time, it was focused on the federal space because there were issues across the federal government about the backlog and then the time it took to actually get a security clearance. And so it was really a partnership with the Office of Personnel Management, who is the main investigative service provider for the federal government, the Office of Management and Budget, and the management side, the Deputy Director for Management, and the Office of the Director for National Intelligence, the DNI. And it really took everyone to do their piece, both the policy, process, and information technology, to enable us to get off the high-risk list. And so Lean Six Sigma, that is where we started. We essentially locked everyone in a room and said, we need to re-look at the process. I mean, is there something in the process that we should change? Because it was established back in the J. Edgar Hoover days, and it may or may not be relevant to today. And so we said, well, let's take a look. And we did discover that there were changes that ought to be made in the federal investigative standards. And we had the people at the table, being the Office of Personnel Management and the Director of National Intelligence, because they own security policy from a federal perspective. So they are the policy owners, if you will, you know, step up and make changes to those federal investigative standards. And then we looked at the backlog, really put a lot of people on it in addition to IT, and we're able to take 100,000 case backlog for DOD down to zero. So that, to me, is a significant improvement. Our average security clearance time back then was 165 days. That was in 2006. And today it's roughly about 47 days. And so, I mean, that's tremendous. And part of what we also did from a security clearance process perspective, is there anything we could do from an IT perspective that could also speed up? I mean, could the system do, could the IT perform some of the functions that the people do today? And as it turns out, for secret clearances only, we established business rules that said if it's a clean case, so no issues identified from the investigator, if we coded the case as clean, let the system just process it as opposed to somebody validating, opening the package, validating. And we now, we call electronically adjudicate, e-adjudication, secret clearances, and it's about we run somewhere between 25% and 30% of the secret clearances are clean. No issues identified. Again, all done by business rules. For 3 months, we did 100% check, you know, validation, and found that, no, you know, everything was working the way it was supposed to be working. And so we do still, you know, spot checks on those to make sure. But really invoked the technology along with the policy change and the process change to bring it into, I'm going to say, today and bring it to be a lot more relevant.
So what are you doing to tackle the other DOD programs or functions that remain on the high-risk list? And maybe you can highlight some of the progress to date in those areas.
When Secretary Lynn came into office as a deputy secretary, we sat down with the high-risk list, and I said, I think two of these are close, that we could get them off. And I said, I think we can get the personal security clearance one off, and I think infrastructure management, that's the facilities. I will predict that that this one will come off the next time GAO publishes. And I would be so bold as to say that if GAO published in 2012, January 2012, that would come off at that time. And it's not by accident. It's because we take a very deliberate management approach to these. We sit down with GAO and say, well, what does it take? The goalpost can't move. It has to stay stagnant. We have to understand the target that we're aiming for and then, again, make the changes in the overarching business. And it's not just to get off the list. It's to make improvement in those areas. Another area that I think we're making great strides in is the business transformation piece. Of course, that's my area. You know, I pay a lot of attention to it, but we are working very closely with GAO. And it's all about, do you have the structure in place to proactively manage the business environment within your organization? And that's really what we're doing.
Beth, could you please elaborate on your approach to empowering your employees? How do you lead change? And would you elaborate again on how you would seek to foster a results-oriented performance culture?
I actually, in addition to my teaming opportunities, I'll say at work, I still coach girls basketball. And so you really learn a lot. I bring it up because you learn a lot from coaching kids, or really coaching in general, because every member of the team has a different thing they bring to the table. Either someone's a good dribbler or someone's tall and they're inside. I mean, that you really want to optimize their contribution to the overall objective. And in basketball, which I love, it's really easy to identify the overall objective, right? It is still to win. Yes, and to have fun for all the parents out there. But it is to win and is to really make the kids a better and for them to grow. And you can track your performance by various, you know, measures, one being the score, the other being turnover, number of rebounds, and those kinds of things. And so, you know, to apply that thought process to work, I think, is very easy. And I think that's why many times people have, you know, good coaches, notable coaches come in and talk to executives, both in industry and government, because it's how do you make an effective team and how do you sustain that kind of performance, even when you bring different people in year after year?
What does the future hold for management at the U.S. Department of Defense? We will ask Beth McGrath, Deputy Chief Management Officer at DOD, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Each edition of the Business of Government magazine has as its focus the core mission of the IBM Center, connecting research to practice as a means to improve public management. We do this by bringing together insights and perspectives blended with an equal measure of practicality and reflection from an array of government leaders, public managers, thinkers, and practitioners. Hi, I'm Michael Keegan, Managing Editor of the Business of Government magazine. In an era of fiscal contraction, today's leaders face unique challenges that present many difficult choices. It is a period that, while imposing many constraints, simultaneously confers as many opportunities to make a difference, introduce new ways of managing, explore pragmatic approaches, and pursue management imperatives that help government leaders perform in an ever-challenging, complex environment. In our latest edition, we bring you conversations with FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, outlining the Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen. Rafael Boris, DHS Undersecretary for Management, discusses how the department is turning its one DHS vision into a reality. Stephen Goldsmith, Deputy Mayor for Operations for the City of New York, discusses how the city is shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and efficient. We offer perspectives on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century from Professor Joseph S. Nye, Jr. and General Anthony Zinni, former commander of the U.S. Central Command. Our forum presents seven management imperatives that government leaders must pursue to be successful in this new environment. All of this and so much more in the Spring-Summer 2011 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Beth McGrath, Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense. Also joining us from IBM is John Bonglas. Beth, I get a chance to talk to many of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnerships among agencies and with the private sector to achieve mission results. I'm interested to know, how are you leveraging partnerships to improve management operations and program outcomes within DOD?
I think everybody throughout their life can learn from somebody else. Someone has been there, done that somewhere in their tenure, either in their job or their experience. And So we really do reach out to both organizations within the department, the new people as they come in particular the political team and also industry. I meet very regularly with industry, either CEOs or someone in their C-suite, their chief operations officer, chief financial officer, again, to find out, you know, what are the challenges they have? How do they approach a particular problem and try to apply that into the department? It is not by accident that we're taking this end-to-end, you know, cross-functional focus within the department. It's been done by many others. You look for cost-cutting opportunities. We're all about efficiencies right now. We don't want to necessarily just cut the budget. We really want to take cost out of the operation. To take cost out of the operation, you need to understand what you're doing and how you're doing it. And those are really some great lessons learned from a variety of individuals, both in the public and private sectors. And again, utilizing the Performance Improvement Council run by the Office of Management Budget and the deputy director there, Jeff Zients. I mean, he too has great industry experience in applying some of those lessons learned. And it's also about how do you get the work done? And this seems like a long way to get around to, you know, the use of collaboration tools. But I think that the environment today is certainly very different than when I started 23 years ago. It was, we didn't have collaboration tools. We didn't use SharePoint. We didn't, you know, we just didn't do that because those things didn't exist. Skype wasn't out there. I mean, there are so many things. I will clearly date myself if I keep talking, but it is a very different environment and very much like the team thought process is how do you apply those tools to the workspace and the workforce? The younger folks coming into the federal government, I mean, they are very hands-off. They want you to tell them what you want them to do. They want to have the ability to do it themselves sort of on their own terms, on their own time, but within your deadlines. And the tools that are available both from a collaboration perspective and just the whole information technology tool suites really enables people, I think, to be much more productive today than in the past, where everybody had to come to the office to then log on their PC. We didn't have, you know, oh gosh, we didn't have laptops back then, and now we do. And so it really is, I think, just great opportunity today to do so many things differently than we have in the past.
Beth, you mentioned or you touched a little bit on young people or people coming into the federal government. And given DOD's critical mission and your specific mandate, could you – I would imagine that your office would require staff with a certain degree of technical skill and expertise. Could you tell us, please, or the audience, what you're doing to ensure that you have a well-trained and technical workforce able to meet not only today's challenges but tomorrow's as well?
We are in pursuit, if you will, of those skill sets that you mentioned, both from a technical perspective and also knowledge on the applications that exist out in the public sector today. I've mentioned a couple of times in our talk the pursuit of enterprise resource planning solutions that the department is pursuing. We have many people on the staff right now who have that skill set. Congress a few years ago provided the department the ability to hire, they're called highly qualified experts, demonstrated industry experience in certain areas that the government doesn't inherently have. We did not have ERP expertise. Therefore, we can utilize this hiring authority to bring in that expertise under a different hiring arrangement, and it's much faster. You can make appointments to that skill set. And we have brought that into the office, also with the technical skills. So when we're deploying these various business solutions into the infrastructure and the environment that we understand technically, you know, how that's going to work. And also, again, we've talked many times about the business enterprise architecture. I mean, I'm really in pursuit of the bilingual individual who can talk both technical and functional. And, you know, if I could pay them double, I would, because they are so valuable to the conversation because it puts it in English, again, for either side. And so I really believe that there's great opportunity still to work for the government, to work in my office. We do, if I did not mention, have openings and are looking for highly skilled, qualified individuals so that, you know, and again, it's we're looking to really enable change to happen, you know, at every level in the department, from overarching to very specific. And so I think the focus on the workforce, their skill sets, we're doing a zero-based review of the entire organization. We intend to take a very matrixed approach. I think everybody wants one to understand what their contribution is to the overall mission, but they also want to be held accountable. People want to be chiefs, not Indians, 9 times out of 10. And so you want to give them that opportunity by taking a matrix team approach to solving a problem or fixing something, achieving an outcome. And so the very much distributing the accountability, I think, is really what people want. They want to be in the game. And we're looking for opportunities, again, for people to be in the game. And our pursuit of those business outcomes, I think, will be really dependent upon the skill sets that we have.
Beth, I'd like to transition to the future. What are some of the major opportunities and challenges you see your organization encountering in the future? And how do you envision the department will evolve to meet these challenges and seize opportunities?
Well, I think we're all experiencing the fiscal challenge right now. And I think it's frankly, just starting. In the Defense Department, I mean, there was $175 billion that was moved, but we really took $100 million and moved it from tail to tooth, if you will, and then saved the $75 billion. And the numbers that that we're really aiming for now, I think, will only be bigger. And so I think it's very important to, as we pursue additional efficiencies across the department, to take them in a very strategic and smart way. You want to be informed about, you know, the impact of reducing resources in a particular area. And in order to do that effectively, I think you really need to understand how you do what you do, who does it, and with what resources. And there you can really strategically make changes without breaking something. I do fear, and I don't mean this any disrespect to any of the comptrollers out there, but if you take a comptroller approach to efficiencies and just take a cut across, that you don't know what you don't know until it breaks. And so that to me is both a challenge and an opportunity to really inform and drive some of these efficiency conversations, you know, as we pursue the targets, if you will, as, you know, as they come down to us.
So, Beth, what advice would you give to someone who's potentially thinking about a career in public service?
Come work in my office would be my first advice. But my second is, you know, I've been in government for 23 years, and I'm positive I would not have had the opportunities I have had if my career was not in the as a civil servant, if I was in the private sector. I was given responsibility very young, and then you just get more and more responsibility. So I really do think that if you're that kind of person who wants the opportunity to lead and to drive, that it does exist. Certainly in the Defense Department, that's been my experience, but I think in federal government writ large. And I do think the you know, the tone of government is changing. And so it isn't this, you know, sort of good enough for government. That just, you know, I'll say irks me. And I want to say, yes, I'm good enough for government and then some. And people should really think that way because, especially the working for the Defense Department, we have an incredible mission. I mean, national security of the United States is just incredible to me. So our mission is clear. Our purpose is clear. And, you know, whenever we can do anything to ensure the security of our nation, that's so powerful. And not to say that other federal agencies don't have equal missions, but they certainly are different. I just think that the opportunity that exists for especially the young people to come in and to learn and to be put in positions where they can drive is just, you know, I would highly, highly, highly recommend it. Again, you know, I've been here for a long time and I don't ever regret it. And, you know, I'm hopeful that I will continue in some capacity, you know, in the federal space for a while to come still.
You mentioned earlier that you're looking to hire folks. Is there a way you can direct people to a website or something that where they could hire? Is it USA Jobs? Is it Beyond? Is it DOD?
So the USA Jobs is where the jobs are posted, and we have many of them out there now that are currently open. And it is the USA Jobs website.
Well, I want to thank you for your time today, but more importantly, John and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, thank you. I've really enjoyed the opportunity to speak with you today and look forward to our next opportunity.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Beth McGrath, Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense. My co-host from IBM has been John Bonglas. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.
Maritime transportation is a vital industry, contributing more than $10 billion per year to the national economy. What are the key challenges facing the maritime transportation system? How is the U.S. Maritime Administration working to enhance the competitiveness of the U.S.? Join host Michael Keegan on the next The Business of Government Hour as he explores these questions and so much more with David Matsuda, Administrator of the U.S. Maritime Administration.